Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review with Donovan and Ken. Episode number 449, recorded March 30th, 2025.
So since at the time of a recording, we were all caught up on comic books, with the exception of the area Section 31 comic that we were kind of holding off on reviewing. So we're doing some short stories from the Star Trek Insider magazine, which was quite a good magazine, but kind of short-lived because it's now canceled.
Damn it.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I didn't find out about it until like a few months before they closed up shop. So I guess they didn't advertise it very well.
Yeah.
If hardcore Star Trek fans like us didn't even know about it.
Well, and you had a subscription.
Yeah. So. Jumped on, subscribed, and then they canceled it 3 months later.
Anyways. Yeah, so today we're going to go over two short stories in two different issues of Explorer.
Right. So we tried to keep it in the same era. So we're doing two Star Trek Picard era stories with some of the side characters from that third season of Picard.
Mm-hmm. And I was looking forward to reading these two because I do like the Jack Crusher thing and it looked like Dr. Crusher was going to be in it too, and it turns out she was. And then I really like Shaun Seven, so I was expecting, you know, to dig these two short stories, and I did. It's just, you know, I don't
they
think I'll
be short.
Visiting it a lot.
They're yeah, unfortunately, short. they're only like four pages long, so you right when it starts getting good, it's over.
Yeah. By definition, because these books had two short stories, or how many short stories an issue?
If you bought the physical copy, you got two short stories. But then if you bought the digital subscription version, then you got four short stories.
Ah, so. That's what it was.
Yeah.
That's a lot of short stories. So.
Oh, no, it's quite good.
They keep it short. They keep individual stories short.
Right. Yeah, and they're by, authors and stuff that we're familiar with. So one of these is by Una McCormick, and the other one is by Michael Dismuke, who does a lot of the Star Trek role-playing game stuff. So they know their stuff.
There you go. I recognize Una, but not the other gentleman the gentleman.
Well, you want to just get into the first one and then we'll talk about it?
Let's do it. I am doing Jack of Diamonds, which is one of the short stories from Star Trek Explorer magazine, issue 10, that was published, I don't know the exact month, but it was early in 2024, so that's cool. The writer is Una McCormick. There is an illustration, one single one, by Louis D. Martinez, and the magazine overall editor is John Freeman. Okay, so the cover of the Explorer issue is a very nice one of Captain Pike, with his gray hair, not overly tall hair, and he's in a Discovery blue and gold uniform. So looks really good. There's a nice kind of Mars look, reddish brown planetary background. It's a nice cover. The full-page art that leads into the short story presents a head and shoulders drawing of Jack Crusher, who looks a little worried, and that's in the top half of the drawing. In the bottom half is a full-size picture of Jack, although a smaller drawing of him, running along a chain-link fence. So he looks like he's running in a dark night alley in the evening or something, in the middle of the night. The title of the short story, as I mentioned, was Jack of Diamonds, which is plastered in more or less the center of the drawing. Okay. And by the way, this is going to be a short synopsis. And for me, that's something. Jack is on the run from two thugs that we find out later lost a very valuable object to Jack in a card game. They were not amused by the loss, so Jack made a hasty exit, stage left, carrying a very heavy box on his back. Jack is trying to get back to the Elos 12, his mother's ship, and his home. His mother contacts him as he is about to scale a fence that he hopes will be the key to his escape. The fence does not turn out to be his salvation, though. His mother tells him she will beam him back to the Elos, but he says no because they both know it will give away the ship's position to those mysterious people who have been chasing them lately. Jack's escape ends up in vain when he finds himself at a dead end with two thugs closing in. Before they can land the first of many seven-fingered punches across his handsome face, Jack is beamed out of the dead end and back to the Elos. He chastises his mother, Beverly Crusher, for beaming him back, but she retorts, saying she reconfigured the transporter to bless it with temporary untrackability. He shows her the 30 Cardassian disruptors he has been lugging around on his back, along with a smaller and much prettier piece of contraband. Jack tells her she asked, and her ever-loving son delivered, as he always will. The end.
So she did what to the teleporter? I was very confused.
Magic. I mean, well, quite frankly, in the first place, I don't know where these people are exactly. I mean, maybe they're saying that these people are somewhere in orbit or on the planet. But if that wasn't the case, how could a ship's transporter signal be traceable like that over vast distances? I don't get that.
Yeah, I don't know. Because, I mean, even if they were in orbit, I mean, it seems like in Next Generation and in other shows, you could beam in stealthily. So I didn't get it. I mean, and was she cloaked? I mean, maybe that's what it was. She was somehow cloaked and she'd have to drop the cloak in order to beam him. But I didn't catch that. She was
no,
cloaked.
I didn't have that.
I'm just trying to think what was the issue? And then not only what was the issue.
Plus, doesn't she has a civilian ship. I mean, would she have a cloaking device? I don't think she had a cloaking device.
She had a lot of stuff that.
Well, in the TV show, she didn't. Or at least if she had it, she never used it.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. I really don't. I did not like that. The whole she ran off and raised him without anybody knowing where she was for 20 years. I didn't like that whole storyline. Did you? Were you a fan of it?
Okay. It's not unusual. I mean, they do things that may not be consistent with the characters just to do something they really want to do, which is give Picard a son.
Right.
And Picard mentioned nothing about having a kid. As a matter of fact, he probably mentioned something about not having a kid somewhere in the first two seasons of Picard. So it was already probably established that he didn't have a kid that he knew of.
Right.
So they had to make that work somehow. And so they're making Beverly do something that you'd be surprised that she's doing.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I just the whole absentee dad thing trope.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why they use it so much. So that aspect of, you know, Picard season 3 and, you know, they use the exact same thing in James Bond and Superman and Indiana Jones and Ghostbusters. It's just like, oh, my goodness, all the kids that grew up in my age, did they all have like really bad childhoods and are like putting this on to their heroes from when I was a kid? Just like, it just seems so weird. I don't know.
It's a point of drama, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Just kind of makes the moms look selfish and makes the dads look irresponsible.
Well, at least Riker and Deanna, you know, they had a good family life once they finally did settle down.
Right.
I mean, they lost the son.
They lost a kid. Yeah, it's horrible.
So that's bad. But I mean, from a parenting standpoint, I mean, at least they had, you know, a little bit more normal parenting thing, at least as normal as you could have when you're on a starship.
Right.
Anyway.
So anyways, so I didn't like that whole storyline. And so it doesn't really make sense to me why she's a pirate and why she needs to capture these 12 Cardassian rifles or phasers, whatever they were.
Disruptors.
Yeah. And, you know, he's looking at it as it's an arsenal and she's looking at it as currency or whatever. So it's just like,
well, yeah. So their whole thing, right? Because I thought their main purpose was to basically be a helping people with medical concerns. So right. Going to where they're needed and they help them with medical stuff. And that wouldn't think that would be involved much with smuggling or all this kind of stuff, but they're getting into all this borderline criminal behavior to fund all their, you know, Doctors Without Borders deal or what?
Right, because I think they're buying the medicine. They're buying medicine and stuff on the black market to help people.
There you go.
Yeah.
And sometimes they use Cardassian disruptors as currency, apparently.
Right.
And by the way, if he had a freaking disruptor in his backpack, he could have taken it out and scared those guys away.
Then he would be a bad guy. Because he's cheating at cards, which makes you a bad guy. And then you're pointing weapons at people. That's not good.
Yeah, but it's okay because these guys are bad people.
They're so mad because he cheated. They're mad.
Hold on. But they're trying to paint that these guys are bad, right, tough knuckle criminals. So it's okay if you cheat a criminal.
I don't think so. Cheating is cheating.
Oh, come on. You've been manipulated by how many stories over your entire life?
Manipulated how?
You're kidding me, right?
No, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about? Storytellers manipulate hell out of us.
Okay, I got you now.
Right? I mean, come on.
I was like, how did you know how much money I sent that prince in Zimbabwe that needed my money to get out of jail? How did you know about that, kid? All right, I got you now.
Every screenplay writer is manipulating the audience. That's his job.
Sure.
And if you're a hack, it's obvious and you insult people. But if you're good writer, then it happens and you feel good at the end.
Right.
Or you feel bad at the end. However, whatever the point of the story was, anyway. You can always tell when a character is going to get it, because all of a sudden they're not as nice as they might have been at one point in the past.
Oh, or right. Yeah,
totally. You know, and then you don't mind them being killed. You know, it's just there's just so many flags in most stories. It's like, oh, I know what's going to happen to that person.
Right. Yeah. And I think like romantic comedies is the worst. Like you see this happy couple and then they meet this third guy and then suddenly the husband or the other guy turns into a jerk so that you feel okay that the girl's leaving him for the new guy.
Oh, there you go.
That's and it's just like, I don't like that.
Right. Yeah.
He was either always a jerk or she's cheating on her husband.
Yeah.
Anyways. So the story's called Jack of Diamonds because he was playing with Earth cards and that's how he cheated, or is it supposed to be just a funny little name?
Well, I think what they're trying to go for here is Jack is basically kind of Starbuck a little and kind of Brett Maverick a little and kind of, and maybe even a little bit of the Saint, you know, with Roger Moore, the old TV series. So he's kind of all, they're trying to present a borderline criminal, but heart of gold kind of guy who, you know, you root for stuff. And of course he gambles and apparently cheats. So he's right. Jack, hey, of diamonds, you know, Steve Danger, you know. So they're, I think they're kind of putting him out as a little bit kind of sort of a 60s, 70s hero trope.
Yeah. But it was also a card game involved, so Jack of Diamonds would fit.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Hmm. And of course, Jack is the character's name. Named after his father, I guess.
Nope, named after his mom's really ex-husband. Father.
Exactly. Yeah, good point.
So there was another short story.
I mean, I know she loves... I know she loves Jack Crusher, the original Jack Crusher, but why did she do that? Considering he's Picard's son? Anyway.
Yeah, no, it's creepy. Yeah. Really to throw off that it's that's who he is, so that us the watcher of the show, we won't know, you know, before the show comes out that that's Picard's kid.
Yeah.
Even though he somehow inherited his father's English accent.
Yeah. Even though
the father he never met.
Odds are there's absolutely no reference to him spending any time as a child in England. Well, he's supposed to be French anyway. Picard's supposed to be French anyway.
Yeah, he's so French with an English accent.
Exactly.
And now his son is same thing, English accent.
That odds are was not raised on Earth has an English accent. Yes, exactly. And they lay it on heavy. So in this story, there's a lot of words he's using that is uniquely English.
Yeah. I think Una McCormick is English. I'm pretty sure she's...
Is she?
Yeah, because she's written a lot of Doctor Who stuff. I think that's kind of how she got her start. She wrote a lot of the Big Finish stuff, and she wrote a lot of novels and things. So right. I think she started... That's how she got into the expanded universe gig. And I mean, I really like all her Star Trek books so far, so maybe that's how she knew the lingo to give Jack here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty thick at times. So
anyways, anything else for this issue? Cause I really don't have anything.
We already talked about the whole transporter thing, which is like, is there a ship specific ID embedded in a transporter signal? It's like, cause why? I mean, if there wasn't something that was very unique to the ship, how would you be able to locate the ship based on the transportation?
I think you could just, maybe you can track the starting and end point of the transport, right? I mean, okay, but, you think that there's some energy being beamed over back and forth.
Okay, but I mean, there's, unless this is a backwater planet that's low tech and doesn't have a lot of beaming going on, there's probably a ton of beaming going on.
Yeah, you would think so.
And how are you going to tell the Elos's beaming from anybody from other beaming that's going on the planet? I mean, it's probably not, this planet is probably not like Earth where people are like beaming back and forth all the time, but still there's probably a lot of transportation going around.
Good point.
Yeah, that's it. I'm done. It was fine. It was good.
No, it was good.
I liked it, but it was like, I was hoping for a little more, but okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I mean, this 4 pages, I was like, oh man, I wish this 4 pages was in a full book, right? I would love a full book based
expand
on
it more.
Jack and Crusher's time. Right. So I don't know. It's weird that, I mean, none of the, they haven't released a Picard book based on them yet, have they?
Not that I'm aware of.
It's weird that we got a Rios book, but we didn't get a Beverly Crusher book.
Oh, interesting. Well, at least we're getting plenty of 7 books.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There is a new 7.
Seven
right.
And Raffi. And then I think there's a more recent one with 7, too, focused on 7.
Yeah, that 7 and Raffi one was just an audio drama, though.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, no, I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying it wasn't a book. But yeah, I think there is one now. I forgot what it's called, but I haven't read it. So maybe I need to read it. Maybe Jack's in there. Maybe it's like he's like the B story, and I'm missing out. So
Well, here's an interesting thing before we move on to the next one. There's a YouTuber, I guess he's an English guy, and he presents himself as like the behind the scenes studio, Star Trek, Stargate, a lot of other sci-fi stuff insider in the studios.
Okay.
And he's been Psytrek, I think is the name of one of the YouTube video series. And then there's some other ones too. He's like maybe three different ones, and it's all just him talking to the camera. So I don't know why it's all these three different or so.
But he's got YouTube things.
Anyway, well, he presents himself like he has scoops. Does he? Doesn't he? I don't know. But he was saying specifically one time he was talking about the idea that Skydance, which is the company who's in the process of buying out Paramount, is very hot on doing a legacy show. Mm. They're very hot on doing a legacy show. And this guy was talking about, well, you got to have seven. Okay, yes, you got to have seven. Agreed. You don't really need Raffi. But if she's there, fine. And then he said, you don't really need Jack Crusher. And it was like, maybe you don't absolutely have to have him, but I think I would prefer to have him strongly in there.
Yeah, because he's the legacy.
What do you think?
Right?
He's the legacy.
He's the legacy from Picard.
Geordi's daughter is the legacy.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think you kind of need them, but I was surprised when he said that.
Mm.
But whatever. What do you think?
No, I would like to have seven, you know, as a mentor role, kind of like how Janeway mm-hmm. was in Prodigy. Especially that second season. But yeah, I mean, do you have to have her? No, but I would rather have seven than not have her.
Well, yeah. And this guy was saying, well, you've got to have seven.
Yeah, no, I agree with him.
And he's like, well, I pretty much agree with that. And he was also saying, well, do they absolutely need Terry Metalis? And I was like, well, yeah, I think you pretty much need Terry Metalis.
Yeah.
I mean, as a showrunner, I mean, okay, so season three of Picard was not perfect. There were things that were manipulative or maybe could have been better.
Right.
But a lot of it was really good. I think he did a very good job, even down to the music. I thought it was very good. So I think you need Terry Metalis.
Yeah, so. I would like to have him.
And he's off to Disney doing things. So, but he probably will get a break from that or have his contract up with Disney and be able to come back and do Legacy. Anyway.
But I don't think he's a must, right? I mean, I could see the show doing just fine without him.
Okay, but please. You got to get somebody who's a show writer that knows what the hell they're doing.
Right, right.
Yes. I mean, because, you know, Discovery was very uneven, very uneven. And and the first season of Picard was not that great. And even though Terry Metalis had some involvement in the second season, that second season wasn't that good of Picard. So
the second season, it seemed like they were like cutting corners by having it set in the modern time for the most part. It's like that was like their cost saving season. It seemed like.
Yeah, that's true. But anyway, yeah, I agree. You just have to have a good showrunner and less hacky, which I think a lot of the more recent shows have been that, well, anyway, whatever. I mean, unless you had a strong showrunner that was really had a good vision and they executed well.
Right. And there's quite a few good showrunners out there.
Okay. Great.
Just give them a try. Give them a start.
Okay.
If you can't get him, but we'll see.
Okay.
I mean,
I know I'd much rather see Legacy than Starfleet Academy, but
I don't know.
I hope that turns out well.
I hope it turns out well. Go in there with high hopes. But I also hope that Snow White would have been good, but it doesn't sound like it is.
How interesting you would bring up Snow White.
Well, I know that it's just the most recent thing, yeah. But I was always like defending it with my kids. I was like, all right, we got to watch it before we make all these snap judgments. And then it came out and it's getting roasted. And
you saw it?
No, well, you didn't see it. I finally was like, maybe it's not worth seeing. I'll wait till it comes out on Disney Plus.
I do not want to go down into a rabbit hole, but I just want to say this. How are they handling the dwarves?
Bad. They're all CG.
Really? They're all CG?
Yeah, they look horrible. It's a train wreck, it looks like.
Oh, okay. Too bad.
Yep, too bad.
Okay.
Shall we move on?
Please.
All right, so in the very next issue of Star Trek Insider, issue number 11, we got another Picard story called Confirmation Bias. This is by Michael Dismuk, and it does have a single illustration, and it's by Pete Walbank. So the cover of the magazine just has Michael Burnham there on the cover, sitting at the command chair. And then the cover of the story itself is a really nice painting. It has a 7 of 9 kind of in the foreground, kind of looking over your shoulder. And then we see behind her is a picture of Captain Shaw. And he's also kind of looking over your left shoulder. And then it looks like they're in a hallway or something there on the Titan A. All right, so story starts with Captain Shaw rudely, because he does everything rudely, reading a pair of Uzagi pirates their Miranda rights, or the equivalent thereof, as he's locking them into the brig. He and Seven depart the brig, and she asks to speak with him privately. Once they're alone and with permission to speak freely, Seven relates how they got these two pirates. So the Titan responded to a hail from a new species who claimed to be the last of their kind with the last of their people's eggs. They said that they were in some sort of emergency and that they were on the run from the Borg. Seven commented that she has no collective memory of this species and that it might be a trap. Shaw refused to listen to her and said that this is a first contact / rescue mission and that her collective data is indeed well over 20 years old. Seven oversteps and requests a full scan of the ship despite the captain's orders. And when they do the scan, they find that the aliens were lying about everything. And that includes the eggs, which were really nanite bombs that would infect the ship if they were beamed over. Seven points out that he had refused to listen to her suggestion due to his hatred of the Borg. He points out that he not only hates the Borg, but the larger-than-life Starfleeters that she tends to be running around with, meaning Janeway and Picard. They depart the meeting knowing that they will never be colleagues, but always professional rivals. The end.
Well, that certainly is in alignment with what we saw in Picard season 3 when we're first introduced to Shaw.
Yeah,
on the Titan.
He's a jerk.
Yeah. Okay. Let me say that at first I hated the Shaw character, but as time went on, I liked him.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons I didn't like him is because he wasn't perfect. He was very flawed. And you know, like Jellicoe and Shaw are very unlike any Starfleet officers we are typically exposed to under the rank of evil admiral. So I really enjoyed the fact he was so different.
Mm-hmm.
But he definitely was treating Seven badly.
In this story or in Picard?
Both.
Yeah. Well, see, I don't know if in this story, I agree with him. Her data is
in the story?
20 years out of date. Yes. She says, I think that this might be a trap because I don't have any recollection of the species. Why would you? You were in the Delta Quadrant.
Delta Quadrant.
30 years ago, right? I mean, yes, just saying, hey, this might be a trap, maybe take an extra step, that's one thing. But to be like, oh, you didn't listen to me because I'm a Borg. He didn't listen to you because technically, I mean, he didn't do what you said because technically he's still the captain, right? I kind of agreed with his point.
Okay. If Riker said, I think it'd be better if we had a more detailed scan before we move in, it won't take that much time. It's just, we're just covering ourselves.
Yeah.
100%. Picard would have said, do it.
Yeah.
Because he has respect for Riker, and it's from a practical standpoint. Yeah. A more detailed scan doesn't hurt anybody.
And it didn't seem to slow down the rescue mission, right? It's not like they stopped in order to do it.
They might have slowed down for a couple minutes while somebody does it, but it's really not too much of a, well, whatever. I mean, but also they were trying to say, oh, warp core is about to breach or whatever. And all these, the children. So I don't know. So they might have both been wrong a little bit, but come on, when your first officer gives you advice like that, and it isn't that much of a skin off your nose, you probably should follow it.
Right. No, I agree with that part, but I mean, the fact that she immediately jumped to, you're not listening to me because I am a Borg, you know, just
well, that's
like,
probably why he wasn't. He's probably right.
Yeah, but not necessarily. Could have just been that he thought that the rescue was that important, right? Not everything he does has to be, you know, racially charged, right? I know they want to build it up.
No, but it probably was.
But we don't know that. He doesn't confirm that. He does confirm that he hates the Borg, but he didn't say that was the reason that he, you know, thought rescuing them was more important than scanning them.
Yeah. Anyway.
And it gets people talking, right? I mean, that's the good thing about Star Trek since the beginning. If you write a story and people watch it and it gets people talking that, oh, you know what? Of course Kirk would kiss Uhura, right? You know, regardless of racial boundaries or whatever. You know, it's just like, that's what he does. He kisses women, you know?
but it wasn't even really his choice. I mean...
But I'm just saying that's kind of how you get people talking.
But it isn't a big deal.
Right.
But you want to make it a big deal because it's race. But I will say this though. I'm gonna chastise Starfleet HR a little bit. I mean, whoever's handling postings here is likely aware of Shaw's traumatic experience at Wolf 359. Mm-hmm. And his written recommendation from Starfleet that they not trust any Borg hardware, drones, nothing.
Right?
And then they got Seven, who is a former Borg drone. She's even got the hardware in a few spots in her head that they couldn't get rid of. Don't you think that's potentially a bad posting?
But maybe that's what they think, that she needs somebody like that to... You know, because she's on the outs with Starfleet too, right? I mean, she ruffled quite a few feathers while she was a Fenris Ranger or whatever. So,
but I think she became a Fenris Ranger because she was out on the outs like years ago from Starfleet.
Right. They're going to put her under somebody that he also needs to grow up, and she needs to, you know.
Oh, well. Okay.
It's so like a learning experience.
Trying to throw the odd couple together, that they're somehow going to just work through it and be better when they come out the other side of that. Who knows?
It worked, didn't it? It worked,
Maybe.
Didn't it? I saw the end of Picard. They had a respect for each other.
Yeah, but until then, the crew gets to be treated to a little war going on between the executive officer and the captain.
Yeah, no, it's not ideal.
No.
But that's why you put this pairing on just like the Titan A and not the Enterprise. You don't want to, you don't want your flagship to be like it, but this little smaller ship, sure. Why not?
Put them in a backwater ship. they should go into on a California class ship.
California class ship. Yeah, exactly.
Anyways.
I like this story. I just, you know, it would have been nice if it was part of a larger story, right? Because it is only like 4 pages long. So it's incredible.
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of good storytelling has conflict to it. I mean, mm-hmm. quite frankly, how Little House on the Prairie ever ran as long as it did with the main characters pretty much being just so darn nice to each other. There wasn't, not that I saw a lot of episodes. It didn't seem like there was a lot of conflict in that show. But conflict makes stories typically more interesting. And definitely the reason they brought Shaw and Seven together like this is for interesting storytelling.
Right.
So, fine. Great. So we're getting a little bit more of it here.
I mean, to be honest, they kind of already did it. You know, Starfleet did it with bringing in Picard and Sisko. Like out of all the ships to set up Deep Space Nine and get it back up to running under Starfleet, let's bring in Picard and the one person that hates Picard more than anybody else.
But so as we know from the novel, I forgot the name of the novel, but I read it like a half a year ago or something. That gave the backstory. That why Picard and the Enterprise was sent to Deep Space Nine because it was a very, very touchy diplomatic situation.
Sure.
So having Picard in the picture made perfect sense. Now, then you can say, should you think a little bit more about Sisko being posted to this? But quite frankly, how many people survived Wolf 359? I mean, how many people are you going to exclude from the Deep Space Nine posting just because they had a potentially bad blood against Picard because of Locutus.
Right.
So I'm not saying you're wrong, but that's another good point. Another good example. I just don't know. Yeah. Good point.
And it worked out there. So it'll work out here.
Well, they weren't going to be together, you know, for a long posting. They just overlapped a little bit.
Right.
Picard was on his way out.
Pliable Truths. Let's that's go. The name of that book, right?
Ah, Pliable. Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Anywho, that was a good book.
Yeah, I thought it was. It gave, but what I find fascinating about that, because there's at least two, maybe three different novels that came out that went over the time of, that's right. The short story, one of the short stories we did and that novel that was focused on Garrick and then Pliable Truths. All three of those stories were set prior to Starfleet taking over Deep Space Nine. And Garrick and how he came to be there and how he was operating there and what was he exactly. And they're all just a little different. So I thought that was great getting all these different takes because I love the Garrick character. And as we said before, when we were going over the short story, I think one of the great things about him is he was so mysterious. You didn't know what the deal was.
Right.
So actually getting more details about his backstory so you understood more what was going on made him a little bit less of a man of mystery, but I did enjoy the stories.
And getting contradictory answers makes him even more mysterious. Which one is right?
Well, true.
Are they all right? From a certain point of view?
From a certain point of view. Mm-hmm. Yes. There was some... Oh, that's right. What, Ben Kenobi's ghost?
Yes.
Something was reminding me.
Wow, I didn't think it would take you that long to catch that one.
From a certain point of view.
Yes, Ben. Anyway. And so my last comment on this one is, you know, I think there's a like a book out there that sometimes you're given to read, from work and things, how to deal with difficult people. And it's like, oh my gosh, that book is so appropriate to this. You're at work and obviously your boss really hates you, and you're the boss and your underling is really a problem for you. So it's like, wow, they are really, they're really nasty. But I do object to the fact that they made Shaw from Chicago.
Oh,
I'm from Chicago too. And I don't consider myself to be an insensitive, nasty person.
Well, that's typecasting there, Ken. They never it is said everybody from Chicago was bad. Just this one guy.
They picked him from Chicago for a reason. I mean, not everybody is Mike Ditka and Al Capone from Chicago. So.
Well, he had to be from somewhere.
True. True.
That's funny.
Anyway.
So what do you think about the whole dead naming? Do you think that he's wrong to keep calling her by the wrong name? Because that's the one thing that does bother me. If she's changed her name, mm-hmm. you know, and that's not her name anymore, that's not what she goes by, then he has no business calling her that, you know, even though we know that that's her name. And
my God, are you woke?
I'm not trying to be woke. I'm just trying to say, if somebody gets married, you don't still call them by their maiden name just because you don't want to learn their new name.
I completely agree. But I always took that whole thing where he refused to call her by the name that she felt comfortable with and always went back to her birth certificate name, mm-hmm. as completely allegorical, if that's the right word, to people that change their sex. And then, you know, they were born Kevin and now they're Chris or no. I know that's a bad example. A female.
Because I
name.
Know both men and women both named Chris and both named Kevin. So you pick two gender neutral names.
Try with Pat.
But yeah, I get what you're saying. No, that's totally what he was. That's what his character was supposed to be, to really drive home that, you know, this guy's a jerk because he won't call her by her given her
preferred name.
Chosen name, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, no, I mean, just every time he did that and they made a big deal about it, especially here in this book where you get to hear her thoughts, it's just like, he really is a jerk.
Yes, he is.
Like saying that the rescue is more important than the scan. And he even says, I'm the captain, so it's my call.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, he's right. You know, this warp core is about to breach and he thinks that it's okay. And it is his call, right? You know, so
it is his call.
I sided with him on this one. And then the next minute he's calling her that. And she's like, you hearing her thoughts about how that makes her feel. And you're like, no, he's a jerk. I don't like him.
Well, yeah. So somebody has to have the authority to make the calls. So in theory, the captain is more like Kirk, who pretty much makes all the calls.
Right.
As opposed to Picard, who once his first officer or even other people have proven their worth and their good judgment, he spreads it around. He doesn't have to make every decision.
Right.
And that's a better position to be in than always having to second guess your first officer. Or have your first officer second guessing you.
Yeah. No, it's a bad dynamic.
Yeah. So there you go.
All right. Anything else?
No, not a thing. This was going to be a short episode.
Yep. So
there are two short stories. There's only so much you can say about them. There you go. Making up for all those excessive hour plus rabbit hole jumping into whatever we jump into sometimes.
True. So if you don't have anything else, we'll just tee up next episode.
Please.
Again, we're kind of caught up on IDW's Star Trek Fair. So we're going back to a book that I had when I was a kid in the 90s, which was a Mad Magazine Star Trek special that had reprinted a bunch of Star Trek skits that they had done in past issues.
Yeah,
so I'm looking forward to reading this.
And I was never aware that there was a compendium of these all brought together. I was reading the original ones that were in individual issues of Mad Magazine.
Right.
So some of them I am extremely familiar with. I remember some of those TOS ones completely. And then some of the more recent ones after I was well beyond Mad Magazine. I'm looking forward to reading some of those for the first time.
Right.
So I don't know. You have like 9 of them, right?
Yeah. There's 9 little Star Trek stories. So I don't know how our synopsises will be because, you know, most of them are just covering episodes or movies, right? So you already know how it's going to end. So are we just going to call out a few of the jokes and then
exactly.
it'll be an interesting episode.
Yeah, and the humor and the because it is it's an illustrated. Actually, comic book kind of story, but very humorous, or at least intended to be humorous.
Yeah, I hope so.
It's going to be interesting to see how these synopses come out.
Yeah, it's a 50-year-old joke. Just doesn't quite land like it did back then.
Exactly. So
it'll be interesting. So that's what we're doing next week. So, we'll have enough IDW to get back to Trek books.
There you go. And especially if folks might be a little older and may recall what these were like, it'll be a blast from the past. I know it's a blast from the past for some of these for me.
Yeah, it was interesting.
I haven't seen some of these comics in like 30 plus years.
Right. Same. Yeah, I don't even have – I like saved all my comic books, but I didn't save my Mad Magazines for whatever reason. So I have – I mean, I'm assuming they're probably in a landfill somewhere.
I still have, I know I at least have a Spy versus Spy paperback.
Oh, really? You
know, that brought together a lot of the Spy versus Spy individual comics from the magazine. So I know I got that, but I agree with you. I don't think I have any of the Mad Magazine issues that I had as a kid.
Yeah, it's too bad. They might be worth something now.
Might be.
So, anyways, it'll be fun to read those tomorrow, next week.
Yeah, sounds good. Okay. Well, thank you everybody for joining us on the review.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes or friend us on Facebook at First Name ST Comic, Second Name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Let's get the hell out of here.